you on BBS Radio. That's my producer.
Please enter your PIN followed by pound.
Oh, shoot. Now I did the wrong PIN.
Please wait. You are not authorized to start a recording at this time. Please contact customer service if you need assistance.
All of you listening on BBS, that was part of our show, okay? We're about to channel, and that was our higher sources telling us to back off for just a moment.
Please enter your PIN followed by pound. Please wait. This conference is now being recorded.
Okay, we got the okay. Welcome. This is Monday, June 21st, and my name is Wynn Free, and we are doing our Monday night simulcast, which is a conference call.
Entry and exit chimes are off.
A conference call simulcasted with an internet broadcast on BBS Radio. So the last few weeks we've had this little way of helping get the energy established, and that was we have everybody on the conference call say hello to everyone on BBS Radio. Are you guys ready?
Ready.
One.
Ready.
Two. Three.
Hello, BBS. Welcome to the call.
There we go. And here's where it gets fun. Everyone on BBS Radio has to say hello back to us if they want to, but they have to do it with their thought forms and just send us hello thinking it. So let's make a space for you guys to do that. I know there's people listening to us all over the world, and even I suspect when people listen to the replay, they may even start feeling your energies. So let's do that. One, two, three. Carla, could you feel that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I'd like to welcome Carla Ruckert back, who has taken a sabbatical from our once-a-month shows because she had a fairly serious operation that she had to recover from, and she wasn't up for doing a show. And Carla Ruckert is the person who was the original channel for the raw material in 1981. For many years has been doing a weekly, is it, channeling at your home, except for the
right.
Summer? Of quote.
Yes, our public channelings are on Saturday nights.
On Saturday nights. And Jerry Brown, who has been our regular partner on this show for quite some many, many months now. And we are really honored to have Carla back. And I know we've gone through these shows and we've sent her the light while she was recuperating. Carla, is there anything you'd like to share with us about your experience with all that?
It's been a blessed trip, as so many of the seemingly negative experiences of life are. I can't say that I was thrilled to experience the pain and suffering which is involved in recovering from a spinal fusion operation with 8 vertebrae involved. It was 2 months before I could lift my head from the pillow without a groan. But, of course, as in so many things of this nature, if you look for the blessings, you find them, and it was pretty easy to find the blessing for me. I have a tendency to feel a sense of satisfaction when I get something done. I get a channeling session done for a seeker, or for the public meeting, or we have a gathering, or I write another chapter or an article or edit something that's come in on from our transcribers. And I'd been just encased in that mode of jamming everything I could into a day and just hardly being able to wait for the next day so I could go at it again. There's so much good work to do. And all of a sudden, my headspace had to change. It had to go from being to doing. I mean, from doing to being. And instead of counting my self-worth because I could see the words on the paper I'd written or something else up online, I'm sort of like a storekeeper. I like to see new things on our archive site. So I had to switch from that to realizing my worth in Essie, my worth as a human being, as a spark of the Creator, and remembering that although I'm worthy from way deep within myself, I could cloud the picture by letting my vibrations go downhill because I was fussing over this or that discomfort that was occurring to me. And so I got back into a really good headspace where I spent my time tuning my energies. And I think hopefully I can carry that back into my working atmosphere and not lose that appreciation of myself as a part of the Godhead principle, realizing that my vibrations, just as they are, you know, that's what I have control over. That's what I can do even if I'm on my deathbed. I can work with my tuning until I'm clear so that the love and the light of the infinite Creator can just flow through. So really, I spent the last couple, 3 months counting my blessings.
Well, hang on. I'm going to mute everybody.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
We're getting a little background noise. Like right now, how are you feeling? Are you feeling, it sounds like...
I'm still really uncomfortable, sore as an old bear, but down on the pain medication so that I trust myself to speak without sounding like an addle-brained idiot. And being off topic, you know, pain medication will do that to you. But I feel so much better. I've worked my way up to 45 minutes at the computer, and I've got
right.
some editing. It feels good to be back in the saddle, even though it's just 45 minutes a day. And I've got so much to look forward to now.
And so
how about you?
I've missed
talking with you. How about you, Terry? How have things gone for you?
There's been a lot of big shifts, and I've left my legal secretary job, and now I'm putting my efforts into something more to my liking, actually. I like my legal secretary job, but this way I'm putting it more into projects that are really heartfelt, and so I've made a lot of good changes.
Boy, that sounds terrific. How about you, Wynn? Sound like
how about
you're just
me?
On there. Yeah.
You know, I've noticed something about people who channel, but this is not necessarily true with you, but the people that I personally know that channel have a tremendous challenge of being grounded. And do you think you're grounded? I think you are.
Well, I think I'm more balanced than most channels because of the fact that I have such a strong mind and the logic circuitry is strong. So I've always sort of been balanced between the two worlds and had a foot in each. But it also helps me that my life mate now is a man who makes his living gardening. His hands are literally in the soil. And he comes home at the end of a day, you know, of hard physical labor and appreciates the difference between us. And so I think I'm grounded more because of my mate. And he says he lives in a more inspired world because of me. So it's a wonderful trade-off where we share these energies in a way that helps us both. But yeah, I would agree with you, and I think I'm probably more grounded than a lot of channels.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I always found very amazing with you and Jim, and quite frankly, I don't think you made enough of it, or at least I don't think most people know this happens, but and I don't even know if it's still happening, but that amazing experience where you would channel and then channel Crow, and then suddenly Jim would pick up where you were, and it was just like the same intelligence. It wasn't very much of a shift, and it would continue through Jim.
Yeah, and I hope to get back to my channeling circles soon. The first Saturday of every month is devoted to people who have been part of my channeling gatherings where I've been teaching channeling, and they come back mm-hmm. and they channel. They have the opportunity to channel in a circle once a month, and more that has become a joy. You can see that online. We have a special section for the channeling circles to differentiate mm-hmm. them from meetings. And hopefully, if we are all tuned in to the same vibration as we're picking up the channeling in the circle, we are all channeling the same entity, and the differences in the channeling are more having to do with people's, you know, waking personality and their life experiences, so that they will find a way for talking through each channel around the circle to make the best of that channel and use the colors of that channel to expand upon and differentiate with the themes that would be possible, say, through me. Say somebody else mm-hmm. is an artist, or somebody else is an engineer or a professor of philosophy. They all have things that, you know, the channeling source can pick their brains and basically offer a fuller look at the subject at hand. Hang on a minute. I'm going to have to get a cat off of my lap. He's driving me crazy. Nick? Would you please put Pickwick in my room? Okay.
We don't know Carla's cat's name. Pickwick. Is Pickwick.
Pickwick likes to, yes. Pickwick is a lovely, lovely cat. He's 14 years mm-hmm. old, and he still squirms around and chases his tail, and he's very playful. He doesn't know a stranger. Mm-hmm. He's a wonderful ambassador at public meetings because he loves everybody. But he has a great love of me. He likes to lick my face. And eventually, you're going to begin hearing purrs. And, you know, if I don't get this cat off my lap, I'm doomed. So that is now taken care of.
When did Jim first start channeling?
He came in 1978 to the first...
So he was channeling in the original group then.
Don was still alive, and obviously, and I was teaching channeling at the time quite a bit, more so than I do now. There was always mm-hmm. a channeling circle going. And he mm-hmm. learned better than any other student I've ever had. That was actually the beginning of our relationship with teacher-student. And it gradually became, you know, partnership and research associate. And then after we married, I became his student. And because he has such an incredible ability to see life as sacred, all of life as sacred, everything that he does is a ritual. And to some mm-hmm. people, this could be very boring. To me, it's inspired. And mm-hmm. especially in 92, I don't know if you knew me then, but I had a similar crisis, and I couldn't sit up for about 3 years. My neck and shoulders had gone away. And so when I got back up, I was trying to figure out, well, what do I do now? And I tried different things. I tried going back to librarianship. That didn't work. I couldn't work a full day on a continuing basis. I gave that up and became a lady of bounty at my church, you know, heading the women of the church and preparing dinners and stuff like that. And I discovered that I had absolutely no talent for calling people on the phone and asking them to bring cookies or chatting people up for seemingly spiritual but actually political reasons, and I had to give that up. So I sort of went back to ground zero and said, how do I want to build my life? How do I want to do this? And I watched Jim, and Jim has this way of never hurrying but getting everything done, because he's got a clear schedule. He's got his rituals. So I have gradually built up my life according to the rituals with which I'm most comfortable. And I found that I was actually a writer, that my work was waiting for me. And so eventually I began working on a Wanderer's Handbook, and I've been writing and, you know, having that kind of schedule in my life for professional work ever since.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I sent you
so
a topic.
You used to be a musician, you used to be a full-time musician, so you varied from profession to profession through your life.
You know what? They told me in one channeling that I was going through working out 27 lifetimes in this lifetime.
Well, that's busy, isn't it? How are you doing with that?
You know, when I was in high school, I was like all into electronics. I was a ham radio operator. I had commercial radio licenses. When I went to college, I used to work in commercial TV stations. I was in the electrical union, and I thought that was my career. I thought I had an aptitude for it, and then life kept going this way, that way, and the other way. But I can see that everything I did played a part in what I'm doing now and made a contribution, because I've had such a cross spectrum of experience of not only different things that I've done, but so many different kinds of people, that you kind of integrate that and you start to see the oneness, how each person has their own individual expression of the oneness, and there's no blockage to seeing it. I think when I sold things at fairs, that was probably the height of that experience, because I learned that if there was anyone that I ever had a judgment on, and they were coming up to my booth to buy something, I better get rid of my judgment, or they're not going to buy anything. So you learn to love people just because they're there in front of you, regardless of whatever, you know, thought you might have had beforehand. And one of my first poems had to do with that. I don't know if I sent it out to the group, A Vendor's Bird's Eye View, where... I don't have it in front of me, so I guess I better not say any more, otherwise I'd read it. But, you know, I sent you this topic, and,
about authority?
Pardon me?
About authority?
It was about the God of opinion versus the real divine source. And I really think that is something that people don't even know they're worshiping. I can use the word worshiping the God of opinion, or being controlled by the God of opinion. And to some extent, there's no way to get completely out of that. So it's not like to judge yourself because you do that. But it's something that I think if people recognized the symptoms of worshiping the God of opinion, if they could look at themselves, they would at least know they were doing it. And then once you know you're doing something, you can readjust yourself. Because that's a really, I don't even know, did you understand what I meant by the God of opinion?
Well, I think that we are, as human beings, trapped or positioned firmly in a web of opinion when we're born. We have to believe our parents. That has to do with our having food and shelter and safety, and we tend to believe what our parents tell us. So right away, we're enculturated into believing authority. Well, my mom does it this way, my father says this. And so we're, I think, as thinking adults, or thinking people, I won't use the word adult because that doesn't really have, it doesn't have a lot to do with age, the ability to think for yourself. It does have to do with a certain ability to take responsibility for yourself and not just loaf along. But when you do take responsibility for yourself at whatever age, you have to examine all of these little gods of your childhood, your teachers and your parents and the various authoritative speakers that may have overmolded your opinion or, contrary-wise, may have caused you to rebel when you actually did not want to rebel, when you actually agreed with something that was said, but, you know, positioned as a kid, you just want to rebel. And so you might throw away the baby with the bathwater as far as having good sense. So I think that, you know, it's a matter of sifting through again and then taking yet another look and yet another look as you go through life and making sure your premises are still true, the premises mm-hmm. of your life. Because I think we take authority from the silliest things. We take authority from people who are famous, for instance, but who may not have as much sense as we. Or we take authority from the talking heads on the TV who offer an opinion that may well be bought or may well be narrow. And it's so important to release ourselves from an automatic acceptance of the things people tell us. And I know that I was thinking about this earlier, and the first thing that came to me, besides a wonderful quote from, who was that? I think it was Francis Bacon, who is a relative of mine, 49 generations back. Anyway, he said, truth is the daughter of time, not of authority. And that says part of it right there, is that if you wait and gather your intelligence over time, you'll be able to shake out the things that aren't working for you as truth and find your personal truths for yourself and not simply lean on authority. The other thing I thought of after I got your email earlier, when in connection with the God of Opinion, is that my Confederation source, Kuo, always begins the session with a request, and I found the one I liked the best here, and he says, it is a signal blessing, this is Kuo speaking to us, to be able to speak through this instrument and other instruments to people such as you. In this way, we feel that we can share information and opinion without infringing upon the free will of any. For we wish to ask you that you think us not to be an authority, for we are not an authority over you, but rather are companions along the way that we both walk. We know the way is dusty, and we appreciate your company as much as you appreciate ours. And I think this is such an important point. The tendency that we have is for an inspired source like the Confederation entities such as Kuo or Ra, or inspired writers, or the Holy Bible, the Quran, whatever we think is spiritually inspired. Even as we read those things, we need to realize that that source was offering an opinion that has a high probability of being useful to a seeker, yet they can never talk to every seeker all at the same time. We're all unique. So they might miss the mark for you in this one instance. And if you try to mold yourself into that opinion that is given you from on high, you've limited yourself in a way which is toxic. So I think it's really fine of them to point out the primacy of free will in the spiritual process and say, look, you know, if our thoughts hit the mark, great. Take them, use them, this is fine. that's why we're here. We're hoping that some of our, you know, discussion will mean something to you, will resound, will resonate. But if it doesn't, drop it. Don't even think twice. Just move on. And I remember, this is a funny story, Wynn, and stop me if I'm going on too long. But there was a student of mine that had taken up a great deal of my time for a period of years. And finally, he became convinced that the sources that he was studying, which in his case was the raw material, were wrong on the subject of free will, and but they were actually negative entities and should not be listened to. And so he's every source that he could go to that would take his emails, he began bad-mouthing our group. And I kept being asked, please defend yourself, please defend yourself. And I kept saying, look, I don't have to defend myself. I'm living a life. People can come check me out. The channeling stands on its own. People can read that. They can think for themselves. There is no need for me to defend myself. Well, one of the things that happened from that was that this poor guy ended up in jail. He just went off the deep end. The other thing that was sad, the positive thing that happened from it was that a woman that was spending a great deal of money working with this particular person sent me a check for $5,000, which was a lot of money in those days, not so much now. But it enabled us to print a book. It enabled us to print a Wanderer's Handbook. And the reason that she did it was that she felt that instead of supporting a narrow-minded person's work, she would like to support the person who was, as far as she could tell, completely without defense. Isn't that a beautiful story?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
So, yeah, I think that people that study channeling and study inspired sources need to retain the powers of discrimination that they have by birth, that they have by their very nature, and to trust that, to trust the individual sense that they have. It's not anybody else's sense, but it doesn't have to be. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, every, all of us, it's our sense of ourselves. And we ought to know we're here, you know. We're on the inside looking out. So I think we can really trust our ability to discriminate between those things that are in general fine that do not resonate to us and those things that are our personal truths and kindle in us the fire of the love and the passion that the truth can develop within one. I know there are moments of such a joy in my life as I become aware in a new way of how perfect everything is. And, you know, that sense of yourself resonating endlessly and feeling all the connections to all the other people in the tribe of humanity on Earth and seeing how beautiful and how perfect that web of love really is and how, even though it doesn't make the radar of public events and politics and economics, it is what makes the human breed so powerful.
Mm-hmm. You know, this God of opinion idea, it's like I remember at a certain point that I had the cognition that I had my father's voice in my head. And that no matter what I did, I had this voice that was saying, he would like this, he wouldn't like this, he'd like this person. And I, you know, for a long time, I never realized that voice was in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did, it kind of blew me away. And, you know, what I see is that it's true for so many people, and it's not just your father, and it's everyone that becomes your father and mother, perhaps. But, for example, you know, when we're talking here, this is an example, when we're talking, we're fairly present with each other. We're not like catering to the audience. In other words, I'm not trying to please the people who are listening. I mean, I want them to enjoy it. I want us to have an uplifting thing. But I don't have in my mind pleasing them. But I watch people that get into a public position and that once they have the attention of people, they become attached to keeping the attention. And so they start asking themselves, subconsciously, I don't even think they do it consciously, they ask themselves, well, what will please people to keep the attention? And I believe this is kind of a service to self circuit, because instead of being authentic and coming from your center, you're thinking, how do I keep the energy pointed towards me? Do you follow what I'm saying?
Oh, sure. And I think that that's the weakest point of any world religion, is that point at which they've built a church and they have bills to pay, they've got upkeep, they've got maintenance, and so the church becomes a place where people need to be made happy instead of a place where people come to share the glory of worship, thanksgiving, and praise to the one infinite creator. And often the moment that you move from Jesus's point, for instance, where they met in people's homes, and he taught in the marketplace, and he had no desire to create a church as such. He had a desire to create community, and he'd send forth people to preach and to gather communities. And then I think the idea was that every village in Palestine and in Syria and the places where he walked, there would be a place you could go to worship the one creator. And it was after his death and after a couple hundred years had passed of people meeting in grottos. You know, you read of them meeting in the catacombs and in secret, because it was against the law at that time in the Roman Empire to worship anyone but Caesar. Was it Constantine? In 385, I'm not sure I have my facts straight, but at any rate, it was the emperor at the time saw a cross on the water and the battle went his way, and so he declared that the religion of the Roman Empire was no longer the pagan gods, but was Jesus and Christianity. And of course, immediately politics entered into the church, and the church has been a very political institution ever since. And it all stems from the fact that they are relating to their people not as priests with a completely unbiased desire to share the love of Jesus Christ or whatever world religion that they're priests of, but that desire to so soothe and palliate and make people feel comfortable and happy that they will donate money. So I think it's a very common worldwide point of commonality, is that a new idea, a new spiritual truth will flourish underground. And when it gets to be the mainstream and it has that maintenance to worry about, there are enormous numbers of temptations that come in to change the way you say something in order to please the people to whom you are talking and from whom you wish to have money. So, you know, this doesn't just happen in religions. This happens in, you know, any organization. I think the human energy is fundamentally spiritual. But coming in second, very close, is the human tendency to become political and politicized and to do things not for transparently spiritual reasons, but for manipulative reasons. And we need to watch out for that. We defend our borders against that kind of thinking.
As you were talking, I had like this cognition that the internet, to some extent, for some people is, and technology, even our conference lines, are like the communities that are built in present day. Not the only ones. I'm sure there's, like, I don't see people walking around in the village and sitting down, and they'd probably get in trouble for trespassing. But there's so many communities coming up on the internet where people are getting to know each other, affiliate with each other, connect with spirit. There was a very interesting channeling from Daphne last week, which left me thinking about something for a long time. And what they said was that there was a question about indigo and crystal kids, and they said, although the majority of them have no idea of why they're here and their mission here, that Facebook is creating an environment that they can share their authentic loving energies with each other in a buzz, and it's helping keep their energies outside of the negative stuff and into the higher, pulling in higher realms. So Facebook was creating community, even mm-hmm. though they have no idea about it, and understanding, most of them don't have the understanding consciously. They found a place to, what's the word, congregate, so to speak.
Yeah. I must say one of the things that's been most challenging about my time in recovery is that I don't get to meet with my spiritual family in Christ in the parish church to which I go, so that I don't get that web of love that overpoweringly surrounds me when I am a part of that group, as we're all yearning to know the truth and yearning to be good workers for the light and the love of the Creator as we know Him in Jesus. And I've really missed that community. Of course, fortunately, as part of LNL research and with people writing in all the time, I am bathed in a web of love constantly. And when, I must tell you, it's just amazing to me how many hundreds of people all over the world have sent prayers and wishes and absent healing and just good thoughts. And it just really lifts your heart when you see that unknown friend that has come to you from Syria or from Poland or Greece or someplace in Africa, and you realize there is no space, there is no time, there is this web of love. And I think community is where you find it, for sure. One thing that LNL Research, our company, I guess you'd say, our nonprofit company that on which we hang all of our hats, you know, as we try to serve, has a new site. It's only been up about a year and a half now, but it is a spiritual community site where we create a lot of different forums for so people can share their opinion on things that matter to them. And we have different forums for people interested in different aspects of the Law of One, and for people just to talk, you know, that don't actually have to be working primarily on a specifically spiritual thing, but simply want to say, you know, I'm having this happen in my life, and has this happened to you, and how did you deal with it? So it's a very positive, it's www.bringforth.org, bringforth.org, and you can also blog on there. We have several people that share their thoughts. I do every day on the blog, but I'm not the only one. There are quite a few bloggers. And I think there are many different ways to express and share those things that matter to us. And how important is it, really, when your mind is opened and you're so excited about all the new things you're learning and you really feel like you're awake for the first time and you jumped out of the matrix, out of the box. And mm-hmm. you go to talk to your family or your friends and they're just looking at you like, I'm not there, bud. So, you know, to be able to find a community of people with whom you can share those thoughts and talk on those subjects is a really blessed thing.
Hey, you know what? If we don't invite Terry to say anything, she's going to shy herself out of this whole conversation.
That's so true. That's so true.
Terry, are you there?
I'm here. I'm really enjoying this. Very much.
What's coming to mind as you listen to this in your life?
Right now I'm sitting in a parking lot, and some cars are driving by and stuff, and so it brings me right out of the frame of mind that I was in during that whole conversation. Like I was in an altered state.
Everything fell away. isn't that so true?
There's a lot of things that have been said that I can apply in my life in this.
Terry, you're not worried what people are thinking about, are you?
Pardon?
You're not worried what people are thinking about you.
No, but I see, like, I have a tendency, like, when they laid me off at work and to think, wow, you know, what's wrong with me? And to not stay centered about the whole thing and to not even think it, maybe it's getting too crazy there for me, and maybe this is Spirit's way of bringing me in more in alignment with something that I'm more in tune with.
I love that word, tuning, to be in tune. To be in tune with yourself is more important, I think, than being in tune with anybody else. But once you get in tune with yourself, you are in tune with everybody else.
Yeah.
All being one. But I love the good can drive out the bad. You know, if you get into a good, positive conversation, then, you know, you're in a whole different place than you were before. You're vibrating differently.
Yeah. I was thinking, as you were talking about one of the channelings that I did recently concerning the consciousness of the dolphins and how they are interdimensionally connected, so that they don't get all wrapped up in the individual trespasses that are done against them in this realm, and they don't then will get ground into this realm, but they keep their consciousness really high, and so they just move through it and on. For instance, in the aggressions against them in Norway, where they have a ritual to kill the dolphins, the boys, it's one of their symbols of giving into manhood when they can go and kill a dolphin. And the dolphins look at that as something that those boys are going through, and in their relationship to their life here in this density, and they don't get all bent out of shape about it, but they just move on.
I thought the amazing thing in that particular channeling was how the dolphins, I don't know if you're familiar with this ritual, but in some city in Norway, the sea is full of blood. They're all pulling dolphins out and torturing them, and the whole town does it as a ritual. And that when we asked about it, they said from the dolphins' point of view, they felt compassion for the people who were locking themselves into third dimension for so many future lifetimes. Participating in an act like that.
So. And again, there's the question of authority. You know, the cultural authority that says this is the way to do things.
Yeah.
I did not know until I met someone in Europe when I was there in 2005 that the shamanism is alive and well in the Nordic countries.
Mm-hmm.
Powerful stuff coming from Norway and Finland.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't write, they just practice.
Mm-hmm.
That poster, you know, too offers a way to get to a deeper level.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was also thinking, when you were talking about Quo, and they enjoy spending time with the group, and some years ago, I asked the question to the Elohim, and I said, do you really like it when people worship you? And they said, no, that they really want to be our companions. There are higher interdimensional companions, and that they can energetically connect with someone and kind of work with them and help them. The way they describe it is lubricate the field with WD-40, and they just need to be they need to be invited in to do that, because then a person can have synchronicities or attract things to them that maybe without that extra help they couldn't get. And so their joy came from interacting with us like that. And being worshipped was just a way that humans responded to what seemed to be this huge authority in another realm.
I was going to say, I don't think that Jesus ever wanted to be related to as worshiping. He wanted people to see through him to the Father, and he kept telling people, all these things that I do, you will do these things and more. You know, as I am to the Father, so you are to me, therefore so you are to the Father. In other words, he was developing the idea that we are all pieces of the Creator, all heirs to hope, I think St. Paul said.
Yes.
Of the Creator.
Now, there's another good thought that crossed my mind that I just forgot. Oh, well.
Gotta stop drinking that coffee, Wynn.
Pardon me?
I was
like debating in my mind, should I say this or should I be polite and let Carla say what she's going to say? Because I knew I would forget it if I didn't. Oh, so now I forgot.
Well, it's probably not worth going back and finding. Maybe it'll pop back in. Send your librarian after it.
Okay. Well, you know what?
You say, go find that.
It's about 6:50. We can probably extend the time for another 2 minutes. I was going to ask you, you probably haven't been doing any channelings for the past 2 or 3 months, have you?
No, I haven't channeled since March. Before my operation. Yeah, the first channeling I did was September.
If anything came up about the oil spill, I know one of the interesting things in one of the questions we asked about the oil spill was that the oil has a consciousness. Everything has a consciousness. You know how Jesus said the rocks would talk and everything would talk? So everything has a consciousness. And that it's this consciousness that has been under pressure for millions of years, perhaps, or hundreds of thousands, and suddenly the pressure is being released, and the consciousness of the oil is loving it. So the higher sources can't do an intervention and violate the consciousness of the oil unless the oil cooperates. A very interesting way of looking at it.
You know, before a hurricane once, I was sitting on the seashore in South Carolina, and I started connecting with the ocean, and the ocean was crying and saying, "We don't want to destroy. We don't want to be those energies that seem to tear down." but the energies of the earth at this time, it is necessary that this occur. And it, they were grieving over the fact that in the natural action of releasing this energy from deep inside the earth, there was going to be collateral damage. And I think it's good to ponder the fact that with our aggression and our taking of that, which is raping the planet, basically, of these things, I see it, the oil spill almost as a bleeding of the earth, of Mother Earth just bleeding and saying, can you see what you've been doing to us?
Mm-hmm.
Can you see that raping the planet is probably not the best idea in the world? So I do totally agree that there is a consciousness there, and that consciousness spoke to me, and it was full of sorrow because that there was only the desire to be part of the good, and yet from time
mm-hmm.
to time there was the necessity to express other energies which had been pounded into the earth by all our wars and aggressions through all of the empires that basically sew up the story of history.
This is the sixth war, and we have to go. Seth is saying we have to go. I was wanting to do a short healing. If it's okay with you, let's just ask everyone for the highest good to just send a silent prayer for Carla's recovery and healing and all our positive sources in other realms to work with this. Is that okay with you, Carla?
That's beautiful. Thank you, Wynn.
Okay, so let's take... next time we're on, we'll be longer. Take like 10 seconds and we'll say goodbye to DBS. 10 seconds of silence.